I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. On the program today, a story about a little boy who liked to play dress-up, and not as a soldier, fireman, or cowboy. No, this little boy liked to wear sparkly dresses. His mother wrote a book about how she learned to love him just the way he is. It's called My Princess Boy, a mom's story about a young boy who loves to dress up. We will hear from her later in the program. But first, we talk about a hugely important vote in Africa, one that could split that continent's largest country, Sudan, in two and create a new African nation for the first time since 1993. That's Sudanese artist Emmanuel Kembe, and it's a song supporting a vote, which is coming this Sunday. Former U.S. President Jimmy Carter, former U.N. Secretary General Kofi Annan, the former Prime Minister of Tanzania are leading hundreds of international poll watchers and thousands of local poll watchers there this Sunday as the largely Christian South decides whether to secede from the mainly Muslim North. Nearly 4 million people in semi-autonomous southern Sudan are registered to vote in the referendum. Sudan is now led by President Omar Hassan al-Bashir, who's wanted by the International Criminal Court on charges of genocide and crimes against humanity stemming from violence in the Darfur region. That's in the western part of the country. It's a part of the world in which our guest, John Prendergast, is very familiar. He's been working toward peace in Africa for some 25 years. He was director of African affairs at the National Security Council under President Bill Clinton and also worked with Susan Rice, the U.S. permanent representative to the United Nations when she was at the State Department in Washington. He's written a number of books about the region, including two recently co-authored with author and activist Don Cheadle. And he's with us now for an update on this important story. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And I understand you're on your way there.
Yeah, going there in a matter of hours.
In a matter of hours. Well, thank you for taking the time to speak with us before you go. You know, clearly just the presence of this large number of poll watchers indicates that there is concern that the vote will be handled not just according to international standards, but peacefully at that. How confident are you that the vote will take place without the kind of violence that we've come to understand is possible?
Well, remember, this vote came out of a peace agreement which ended a war that led to over 2.25 million deaths in southern Sudan. And so the potential for violence is extremely high because the stakes for this particular referendum and this vote are enormous. I mean, a third of the country could leave Sudan, taking with it most of the oil, which is the lifeblood of the economy and the economic growth that Sudan has experienced over the last decade. So with those kinds of stakes, you know that there are spoilers hiding in the grass, willing to destabilize the process in order to potentially disrupt it and maybe reverse it.
To that end, President Omar Hassan al-Bashir has been quoted recently as saying the secession of the South would be, quote, losing a part of the homeland, but it will not be the end of the world. Is that an encouraging sign?
Yes, I think it is. I mean, I think the most important confidence-building ingredient in all this is the people of southern Sudan. You know, they have fought now for over 5 decades for an independent state, and this is freedom for them. And so they're going to turn out en masse, no matter what obstacles are thrown up in their direction, no matter what the political machinations are in Khartoum or in surrounding countries. And they're going to make their voices heard very, very clearly that it's time for an independent state in the South. And other things are going to happen. There are going to be a lot of glitches along the way, but their assertion of that independent state is going to be the clear sign that emerges from this vote.
Do you feel confident that President Bashir al-Bashir will recognize the vote?
I think he says that, but I think they will try to question the credibility of the vote. They've already worked with a number of lawyers' associations in Khartoum and civil society groups in Khartoum, which are really just fronts for the government in the north, to question the integrity of the process leading up to the vote. The registration process and other aspects of that.
To delegitimize the vote.
To delegitimize the vote. So that's our worry, is that they're going to spend a lot of time in courts trying to question it. And of course, a number of countries in the Arab League, even in the African Union, maybe even in Asia, will, if the Sudanese government in the north questions the integrity of the vote, they will line up behind them because they're commercial partners and oil partners with the government. So it'll cause some international questioning of whether or not this really is a legitimate vote for independence.
Well, it is assumed, I think, that the vote will be to separate. What then does the United States do? And what do members of the international community who want to support that do?
Yeah, I think we just have to make a determination. Anyone who cares about this, particularly governments and international organizations like the United Nations, need to make a determination as to whether or not the vote was an expression of the will of the people. If they determine that indeed people express their vote, then we need to line up very quickly behind it because there are going to be all kinds of challenges, not because people care about the integrity of their process, but because they're trying to undermine and obstruct the independence of Southern Sudan.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We're looking ahead to this Sunday's referendum on Southern Sudan independence. 3 million people are expected to vote, at least, including many in this country, as 8 cities are hosting polling sites. My guest is John Prendergast, co-founder of the Enough Project, which centers on human rights and concerns of crimes against humanity. He was recently labeled America's most influential activist in Africa's most troubled regions. You wrote a piece for The Wall Street Journal a few months back, which was headlined, "Obama is still AWOL on Sudan." Do you still feel that way?
Yeah, I think what we were really worried about in mid-2010 was that candidate Obama and Senator Obama had made some rather remarkable and striking assertions about what he would do as president with regard to Sudan, with regard to stopping or doing all that the United States can to stop the genocide in Darfur, and in support of peace in the South. And his administration hadn't been doing the things that he had promised. So we began a campaign, a bunch of NGOs and civil society groups began a campaign, a very respectful campaign, saying President Obama, live up to the promises. I mean, it's not unlike many other issue groups that were pushing for all that they can get on these issues. And President Obama responded in a very positive way, and I've had a chance to meet with him a few times since then, and he has instructed down through the State Department and the White House that his staff should be working on this full time. He has a Deputy National Security Advisor, Dennis McDonough, now leading the interagency process, and he sent out Senator John Kerry to help give some gravitas and lift to the diplomatic efforts the United States has been making. So I think he's made quite a substantial intensification of effort during these critical last 4 or 5 months to get the United States positioned to support conflict prevention efforts in the South and conflict resolution efforts in Darfur.
What diplomatic initiatives have not yet been tried that could be tried? I think, you know, given that your colleague Susan Rice is now at the United Nations, who is as strongly identified with this issue as anybody in the American government, the president certainly very conversant with it, a number of people in the faith community, people who've worked on human rights issues are either actively engaged in this issue in the government, the International Criminal Court having already charged the president, Omar Hassan al-Bashir, with war crimes. What else?
The role model in the region for peacemaking is the 2005 peace deal between the North and the South that led to having the referendum be planned. And in that case, we had a Secretary of State, Colin Powell, who was deeply engaged. We had a special envoy, former Senator John Danforth, who was deeply engaged. And more importantly, perhaps most importantly, we had a team of American diplomats who were on the ground in the region working on this peace process between the North and the South full time, literally for years. We haven't done that in Darfur. 7 years into this, what the United States has called genocide, the United States hasn't invested with boots on the ground, or actually, you know, dress shoes on the ground in this case, diplomatic efforts where we're there full time and helping to support a peace process for Darfur. Similarly, we need to intensify our diplomatic efforts between the North and the South. So I think we're on the right path there, but we still need to raise the level of the game to make it happen in between the North and South as well.
Before I let you go, just one more question about your work with other human rights activists. I did want to ask about the U.S. interest there. Many people in the faith community have been very engaged in this issue for years, the issue of Darfur, particularly for years, because there was a moral component to this. As many people would say, you know, once you become aware that genocide is possible, you have a moral obligation as a human being to do what you can to intervene. But what about people who don't share that perspective, who say this really ought to be a question of U.S. interest? Where is the U.S. interest? What is your answer to that?
Well, I think the interest is really in, for people like that, for in cost effectiveness. I mean, it makes no sense for us to spend billions and billions of dollars a year keeping people alive, watching the human misery occasionally portrayed on our television screens, sending our humanitarian assistance and sending peacekeepers from all around the world when we could actually invest in preventing all this. And we've done it before in many places around the world. The United States has great diplomatic capacities. We just need to utilize those capacities and end this cycle of human misery in Sudan.
Let's say you and I get together 5 years from now and have a conversation about Sudan. What kind of conversation do you think we'll have?
If everything goes well, if we invest in conflict prevention, if we invest in a good process that occurs for this referendum, we could be talking about the birth of a new nation in southern Sudan that gets off on the right foot because it has oil money that can actually fuel development. We can talk about the transformation of Sudan from an authoritarian system to a democratic system. And we can see the possibilities that exist if the people of Sudan's capacities are unleashed. That's the good news, potential scenario. The worst case scenario is that the North and South go back to war and that the Darfur war deepens. Both of those scenarios are equally plausible. The external ingredients, what the United States does, what Egypt does, what China does, what the Arab League does with respect to diplomacy and respect to conflict prevention, are the ingredients that are going to determine whether or not Sudan goes back to war.
John Prendergast is co-founder of the Enough Project. He's a former director of African Affairs at the National Security Council. That's in the administration of President Bill Clinton. He was kind enough to stop by our Washington, D.C. studios. As you heard, he's on his way to Sudan. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Michelle.